Hello again, and you are welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. It's URC final week. No Irish involvement, though Munster and Leinster both beaten at the weekend. Glasgow Warriors take on the Bulls in Pretoria on Saturday. We'll be talking about how both provinces really left a golden opportunity behind them last weekend a little bit later on. I'm joined this week by Johnny Holland and Eddie O'Sullivan as well. Eddie, it's been a while. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be back.
I hope you've been keeping tabs on everything over the course of the year and during your time over in the States.
I've been keeping track of everything very closely.
Well, listen, we've a lot to get through, so we'll fire into it. I do want to point out, actually, today's podcast, 19th of June, 12 months to the day since Andy Farrell's Ireland squad gathered for day one of their World Cup training camp last year. It's been a long old year, and incredibly, we still have 3.5 weeks left to go in it. So yesterday, Farrell named his 35-man squad for next month's Test Series in South Africa. The key points to get through: no Jameson Gibson-Park, a hamstring injury for him rules him out of the series. Jack Conan is sitting out of the tour for personal reasons. Himself and his wife are expecting a baby. Mac Hansen is also staying behind, having not played since New Year's Day, so just really wasn't ready to take on a two-Test Series in South Africa. Three uncapped players in there: Jamie Osborne, who's been knocking on the door and in the squad for a good while now, but is yet to make the debut. Sam Prendergast is in among the out-halves, interestingly. And then Ulster's Cormac Izichukwu is included for the first time after what was a real breakthrough second half of the season for him. Eddie, I suppose, first things first, what did you find to be the most interesting piece of news coming out of that squad selection yesterday, just from an overall point of view?
I think the inclusion of Prendergast, to be honest with you, because he's just gone with, I suppose, two standout fly halves, Crowley and Prendergast. No, he has other options there, obviously. Mm-hmm. Frawley can play 10 as well. But if you're sticking an uncapped player in like that, you know, he obviously believes if he's called upon, he's up for it. It's tough on the Byrne brothers, you know. But I just think that's a bit of a punt. And I suppose the summer tour. But having said that, you wonder if Crowley went down, would Prendergast be the next man up? You know, and it's hard to see that. So, you know, say, why is he in there? Probably for the experience, I think. I can't imagine him going to Prendergast. If Crowley stays fit, it's not an issue. But if Crowley goes down, then that becomes a talking point. But I would be surprised if Prendergast went in or even made a bench. Like, he's a fantastic talent, there's no question. But you'd have to question marks about his experience. I mean, and I can tell you, having been there, you know, playing Test rugby in South Africa is incredibly intimidating. It's a hostile environment. Even as guys who went on Lions tours there. So it's not for the faint-hearted. And a young guy like him, I can't imagine he's going to end up on the field unless some catastrophe of injuries. So I think that was an interesting one for me. But my take on it, of course, it's just me looking from the outside in. I don't have any special news on it. I think he's there safety experience, which would be great for him.
Johnny, as Eddie was talking, and when Eddie said, you know, is he going to be playing this summer, you kind of shook your head as he was saying it. I get the impression you think he's probably just there for the experience of being around the Ireland environment, and we're probably looking at Crowley and Kieran Frawley as the two options for the Test Series.
Yeah, I shook my head at him being next up, because I don't think he's next up. I think Kieran Frawley is their second choice 10, because it's been a political animal, really, hasn't it, the Leinster selections and how Andy Farrell sees it. Because I think I saw some course on Twitter or X about Jack Crowley being put in when he wasn't the starting 10 at Munster. And he wasn't the starting 10 at Munster, as far as I could see. And Andy Farrell decided that he was going to be his next out half. And I think that's what forced the changes in Munster, you know. I think there was an opportunity there to start changing around, and as a result. And I think that's what drove it. But I think that's another, it's the very same thing. And like we spoke a good few times on the podcast about Kieran Frawley being ahead of Jack Crowley at 10 in the Maori trip and the New Zealand tour. But he got injured at certain times and missed his opportunities. So like that could have been very different if Kieran Frawley had stayed fit. And then maybe they would have forced Leinster's hand as well in terms of playing him at 10. So I still think that he's Farrell, I don't know if he's second choice or not, but I think in terms of experience on this tour, that I think he is the second choice 10. He obviously covers a lot from the bench, although you can argue at 15, you know, missing that high ball for the try at the weekend, you know, if the South Africans see anyone who's suspect under a high ball. I'm not saying he is suspect, but he obviously missed that one, and they'll smell a weakness and go after it again. So I think Kieran Frawley's been picked as a 10. that can play in other positions. And I think Sam Prendergast is third choice. So, like, not to say that he won't play. It's two tests, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that if it was three tests, I think you're putting yourself under pressure there because injuries and knocks and niggles and whatever else and bench spots. I think with two bench spots, they probably see that they won't have to use him. And then whether he sneaks onto a bench or not is a different story. But I think he's third choice. And if they get to third choice, he'll play. But I think that won't be the reality, I think.
I think the other, just talking about Crowley, I mean, I think he's the man, you know, to be fair to him. He's taking his chance, but he's still pretty inexperienced on the really big stage. I mean, he's had a good season and all that, but I just think South Africa has different questions. And if he was to struggle, just for argument's sake, in the first test, then like, where do you go next? Because again, Frawley is a fantastic talent as well. Frawley's problem at the moment is going to be, what is he? He's all over the place. And that's often a huge problem for some players. They're so freaking talented. They can play in so many positions. They get pushed around from position to position and they never really settle anywhere. And they become the, you know, the extra cog in every quad that can play anywhere. They get a lot of bench starts. So there's an element of risk around the 10 there, you know, is that if Crowley struggles in a test game, you know, and he really has a bad day out, you've got to go with him again next week. You're stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't go with him, you're putting Frawley in, who's even less tested.
But Eddie, would you have gone with Ross Byrne there? Because I don't think many would.
I just think for stability, it's a safer bet in on a tour. And the only thing I say about South African tours is they are incredibly tough. I mean, psychologically, they're incredibly tough. They're not just, we all know they're physically tough. Like, they're, every game's a barroom brawl. And but it's a hugely intimidating venue to play at. I mean, I was down there years ago, we had two tests on there, and the whole build-up is very intense. And on the field, the crowd, the atmosphere, it's, you really want to be fairly seasoned. And Byrne is fairly seasoned. Now, I'm not making the case that he's the best out of half an hour, don't get me wrong. I just think not having him there leaves you exposed to someone who might be able to go in and settle a game for you because he's been around the block. He's not going to set the world on fire. But that'd be just my take on it, because you're a long way from home, you know. Now, maybe over two tests, it's not a big issue. You know, two games. If you're right, Johnny, if it's three games, you know, maybe that becomes more of a discussion. But I do think he's nailed in now for Crowley, whether he likes it or not. He's the go-to guy. And if he struggles, he doesn't have a fix, really, or a fix that we know about, you know.
And it does, like, Johnny, it does kind of show up how fascinating it is where you have two coaches, one at provincial level and one at national level, Andy Farrell and Leo Cullen, and how they're both looking at the same player, Kieran Frawley, and you get the sense that they're seeing two different players. Andy Farrell seems to be seeing an out half who can cover other positions, whereas at Leinster, it seems to be he is just someone who can cover multiple positions and doesn't seem to have one set down.
Yeah, but I find the Leinster approach from kind of funny because he is an out half. Like, I came across him in the IL, he's an out half. He might go into 12, but like, he wasn't a 15, you know, as far as I'm aware, he wasn't a 15. So like, they've actually just used him out of position and he's gotten comfortable there because he's a good footballer, you know. So
I agree with Johnny. I think his best position is over half. I don't think he's got the gas for 15 anyway at international level. He's a really good footballer. He's gonna stick him in the century, he won't do anything stupid. But his best position is 10. That's his spot, you know. And that's why he's a big dilemma for his career. You know, sticking at Leinster is going to be a Johnny come lately, go to all trades, excuse the pun, but like he won't settle, and that his career struggled with that. Like, you know, he does need to play 10.
He's in his mid-20s as well by now. Like, you know, he's not a kid as well. Like, you know, I suppose you have to come to a point where he needs to be bold and make a decision about what he wants to be.
See, the point that I'm kind of finding hard is that, like, he hasn't played so poorly that Leo shouldn't trust him. Like, I don't understand why he hasn't played more at 10. When they've had to use him, he's actually done very well there. You know, I think he had, if the drop goal went over, he'd be everyone starting 10 for the South African test. Like, that's how the world works. But, like, obviously, he wouldn't have been. But, you know, Jack Crowley in the 12 jersey got a lot of credit for kicking a drop goal against Leinster in the semi-final. And Kieran Frawley nearly had that moment of winning a European Cup. And people would have looked at him differently, no doubt. It's one kick of a ball. Like, it should not count for one kick of a ball. Because I think his game is very rounded. He actually runs that attack very well, the attack that Ireland are trying to play. Maybe that's what Andy Farrell sees in him. And we kind of briefly mentioned the Leinster attack there off air. But, you know, they are different systems, I suppose, and they put their mass in different things. But Kieran Frawley is well able to run that system. A lot of systems, he's well able for it. I just don't know why he's been overlooked so long in Leinster. Like, that's not me saying Ross Byrne's a poor player or anything, because I actually at various times I've stood up for him and said that, like, he'll facilitate the game, he'll kick your points and all that kind of crack. But his last few weeks, he's left holes there again, and that's what's got him out of the Irish selection. But obviously they see Kieran Frawley as being better than him in terms of running their game.
But the challenge for Frawley, as for any player in his position, is particularly a playmaker like a 10, is to go in, having not played 10 all season, just dipping in and out and playing full back, playing centre, and then get thrown into a full-on test game under serious pressure. Even though you know the system, even though you have all the skills, it's then to go up to that level and then deliver under pressure, it's gonna put, huge stress on him, and what you say to any player, to give a guy the chance to deliver at international test rugby level, it's called test rugby for a reason, is he's got a chance to build his game through the provincial game, and then he goes up and plays the test game. He hasn't that grounding in the provincial game because he's been moved all over the place. And I agree
I
with
think
Johnny. I think he is a cracking 10, but he won't become the 10 he's potentially can be until he starts playing there regularly. And then he's a real shot of running the Irish number 10 short by doing that, but he's not getting a chance at the moment.
and you kind of we talk about Ireland are obviously using the 10 spot as one of their experiments or one of the places they're going to open up and develop. Interestingly, like, they could have gone with Ross Byrne, Eddie, like you said, but then they might have developed a different area. Obviously, they see this as an area that they're going to develop. So then you get into the conversation around where they're picking older lads, because you need stability, like Eddie has said there, to put around a guy like Kieran Frawley if when he's in or if he's in, so he can actually show how good he is, as opposed to putting a couple of different positions in there
It's a
together.
big
Because
ask from though. It's a big ask.
it is a big ask for him, but
And
the
they might,
problem.
but you know what? I always say, look, you're talking about selections. You have to think Farrell has a much better feel for this than we do, because he's in the middle of it. I always said that. People tell you should have picked this guy, you should pick that guy. The guy who's picking a team has the most information. But we're just speculating, that there is risk around if they go to Frawley in a test game now, and there's risk again. There's risk for Crawley as well. So. That's the area. If you want to go and win two tests in South Africa, and the key position number 10, the two guys in there, you're just not sure about them yet, 100% sure. They're going to find out one way or the other, which is probably part of the experiment, really,
So one thing you both mentioned there, obviously, is the fact that this is a two test series rather than a three test series, and like a 35 man squad is quite big for a two game tour. How many, all things going to plan, and there isn't a flurry of injuries or anything like that, broadly speaking, ballpark, like, how many players do you think we're likely to see getting minutes over the course of these two games?
Oh, you're probably...
Because if it, I'd be fairly certain we're not seeing all 35 players over those two matches.
Well, you won't get to 30. You'll get to 26 or 8, will you?
Yeah, true.
Possibly.
23 plus.
Unless it's a raft of injuries.
Yeah.
Plus the fact it depends as well. If a Barnstormer and they win the first test, right? You can go two ways, and you can say, okay, we have a chance here to win a test series in South Africa, which just that doesn't get done very often. Do we double down and go again next week and go for it? Or you say, well, we've had one test won, it was a great performance, where we are. Let's roll the dice and put a few younger guys in and give them the experience. So there's lots of options if you win the first test. You can play it both ways, and both are viable, possibilities. If you were to get hammered on the first test, like let's say the first test went south and then you shipped 30 or 40 points, you've got now we're going to stop the ship from sinking here. You've got to double down on the second test because you don't want to come back with getting your backside handed to you 2 weeks in a row. So it depends. I think all that where he goes on selections will a lot depend on how the first test goes, I would think,
One of the uncapped players in there, Cormac Izichukwu, it probably does feel like a long shot that we'd see him in a test. Andy Farrell tends to kind of get uncapped players in for a couple of camps to help them get the feel of the place before giving them minutes. But a brilliant reward, Johnny, for a player who just properly took his chance in the Ulster team in the second half of last season. And as I saw, I can't remember who it was saying this yesterday on X. For a player, you have to remember, who up until midway through last season was playing the bulk of his rugby week on week in the AIL. This is a brilliant rise and something something to be celebrated, I suppose, for you in particular, an AIL coach as well. You must be delighted to see it.
I think it's a reminder that players aren't actually that far off. They're a couple of performances away from becoming really serious. And like the old one was when Tomas got injured and Conor Murray, obviously I think everyone knew he was going to get there, but his sudden rise, like, you know, that was taught to our academy for years afterwards, that like you're a Conor Murray moment away from being a full blown pro and international. Like, you know, you're not that far away, but it's convincing players that they're not, you know, and to stick with it, because, you know, if you didn't have 10 of those internationals available for Ireland, you'd actually come up with 10 very good standard players quickly, you know. So we have a good player pool at the moment, although I know there's been a bit of discussion around the fact that you lose a couple of key players and all of a sudden you're looking at not winning a test series where you could have been very confident with the likes of Jameson Gibson-Park or whatever. But I still think we've got, like, you're talking about a lot of players left out of that squad. Shane Daly, I think he's been unbelievable all year. David McCann could surely be a little bit hard done by. Gavin Coombs, we don't even have to go into it. You know, there's plenty. There's been so many more that are well able for that that environment. But Cormac Isichukwu, I think, has been outstanding for the last couple of weeks. He's beaten all those players in because of the excitement, maybe the approach he's taken to his game. He's just gone after it, hasn't he? And he's dynamic. He's getting through contact in the big games, you know. So he's you'd love to see. Like, I think this is, and Eddie was going back to it, like, you know, the person picking the team doesn't get to select 43 players in a 15-man game. Like, I think the public think that you can sometimes. They just keep selecting and forget that you have to drop someone. But, you know, I think you'd love to see him in the game. And from a coach's perspective, sometimes it can be hard to just throw them in there because you're trying to protect them as well and not just pull them in and everyone thinks he's shocking all of a sudden because he's a poor game. But you'd love to be backed into the corner where you had to see him, because I do think he'd stand up.
He's got an X factor about him, right? You know, he's got that ability to beat people one on one. He's had some big line breaks for us to share. He's a big kid. He's not that young. He's 24, I think. No, like, he's not. Judas, you know, coming through the Leinster schools and all that, and then going over, leaving the country and coming back. You know, he has gone in around the block, and that means people, when people, oh, it's this new kid on the block, think he's 19 or 20, maybe 21. He's not, he's 24, he's been around for a while, he's been the road of hard knocks, you know. And the fact he came through that and has now kind of burst onto the scene, and burst is a good word for him, because he's impactful play with Ulster. And Ulster haven't been going that well this year, you know. They've been hit and miss a lot of the time. They came well near the end of the season, but he's had big moments in games. And now he's got that X factor, which again, that to me is, you know, guys have that. They beat guys one-on-one, got quick feet for a huge man. And he's up and away once he makes the first tackle. So you can see the potential in him. But again, I think I agree with Johnny. I think he's there probably for the experience of it. And I wouldn't be shocked if he's around again in the autumn, you know, depending on how things go on the early season for him with Ulster. But I think he's going for the future. And fellas like him are hard to find that can, with that sort of pace and that sort of size, we don't produce them in Ireland very often, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Couple of other bits then on Ireland. You mentioned, obviously, all of a sudden that we picked up a couple of absentees. Jameson Gibson-Park is out and Jack Conan is out on scrum.
He's a horrendous loss, really.
Yeah,
because he's one of the top scrum halves in the world at the moment for his game management, his execution, his eye for a line break. Like, he ticks it all the boxes at the moment. A team in the world, he wouldn't be in the shake up to get on. I mean, across the world. So he's a massive loss now. Not that the guys we're backing him up are not, you know, they're well-rounded players, but his form is so good at the moment, I have to say.
But to follow on from Gibson Park being out, you look around the squad, is Craig Casey, Johnny, the player with potentially the most to gain out of this tour? Because there's a massive opportunity that's after opening up for him here over these two games.
Absolutely. And like, if you're going like for like, you put Craig Casey straight in there. Munster have obviously backed him. He's comfortable with Jack Crowley, but so is Murray, like, to be fair. So I think, you know, it depends. Again, we're talking about things that we don't know what way it's going to be selected. So we're waiting, but and hopefully respectfully. But like, you know, if you're Andy Farrell and you're thinking first test, solidify a bit, give the lads an opportunity to put their best foot forward. Murray has so much experience. Maybe you just let him do it that way. He's physical as well. Craig Casey is so physical. Like, Faf de Klerk can be physical. So can Craig Casey. We've seen it a couple of times in the last few games as well. So I wouldn't let that, you know, stature allow you to say, like, oh, he's not as physical as Murray. He absolutely is. And then he's got the zip around the face as well. You just hope that You know, as Eddie said, like I don't know what it feels like to be in South Africa playing against them, but the probably the best tactical team or strategical team when it comes up to a one-on-one battle, they could absolutely go after you, you know. And Murray's used to that. So whether you throw him into it and just see whether he becomes a viable option to start, even when Jameson Gibson-Park is there, you could well get that out of it if you play him, but you could really dent him if you get around.
Yeah, I think Casey, just watching his game develop, I think he's getting better, he's getting smarter as he goes. But you know, he's learning, I think, on the his game management and decision making at times is a bit hear him, scare him, you know. He misses rucks sometimes he should be at. He panics a bit, he takes a step and he's not sure what he's doing, and he gets a touch of white line fever. You know, when we get 5 meters out, he's almost guaranteed to have a pop there. Now he's getting better at it. There were my critiques of him when he was, you know, when he started out. That's getting better. But a test will be those creaks, cracks can appear again because there's less space, there's less time, there's more pressure, and you kind of revert to type. I have a sense he'd probably start on the first test. You know, I think he'd go on the first test. He knows he's kind of on the bench if things are going south a bit. And I think then if Casey comes through that first test under that sort of pressure, they're going to be under immense pressure. Particularly, we could talk about the scrum because it'll be fitting into the Munster, but they're going to go after our scrum in South Africa after what happened to Leinster. Sorry, Leinster or Munster. They went after Leinster scrum last week and had huge dividends on it. So there's going to be pressure at the set piece. So, but my point about Casey is if he managed that pressure well and he's a big performance in the first test, that's a huge learning part of his learning curve come through in the first day. So I sense he'll start. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. I think, you know, we've got Connor there to settle the ship down if things are going a bit pear-shaped. So but it will be again interesting to see how he copes to the pressure and the physicality, because I think at times his decision making is just a little off. And at test level, that's going to get exposed even more, you know. You can't hesitate a second at that level and you're going to get caught. He gets a little more latitude in the URC to make his mind up. But I'm just looking, that's I'd be watching that aspect of his game now. If he gets the nod, I think it'll be a really good test for him. And if he comes through that, fair play to him. I think he's made a big step forward then.
Yeah, big opportunity for him this summer. One of the probably last point then, before we move on from Ireland specifically, it's something you kind of mentioned a couple of times as we've gone along here, Eddie, is like South Africa just being a rugby mad country, and the never mind like the quality of the team you're actually playing in South Africa, but the whole show around the Springboks, and it is the only show in town when they are playing, you know, on a big test week, and that level of scrutiny and that level of pressure around the media is something that Ireland are going to have to deal with. It's going to be as big a test off the pitch as it is on the pitch, dealing with the like we've seen it even in the last couple of months how the South Africa media and supporters are very quick to pick up on any
Oh
perceived
yeah, and they've been a bit,
and that's
they've
going to be
been,
an enormous test for them to
yeah,
deal with.
they've been a bit incendiary as well in their own kind of. They've thrown a few things in the water, like it's about talking about the Irish players telling them we'll meet you in the final, which I don't believe for a second. You know, and was it the land they came up with some crazy stuff as well, you know. So like they do like to ramp it up because they do like to intimidate you. Like they intimidate you on the field, off the field. It's just part of the whole culture. Even like my memories of going into test games there down in the stadiums is there's thousands of people milling around, big South African guys shouting abuse at you, you know, as you get off the bus, and if the braai's going and there's you can smell burning meat. Like and the noise levels and the music, pounding the music, even when you're in the changing rooms, you can hear the music pounding outside and the crowd roaring. It's a very intimidating place. Like ask anyone who's been down there. It's a tough place to go and get a result. We've done it before, you know, but I think it's a great tour in that respect because you find out a lot about fellas in those tours. You know, you find out who's really up for it when the chips are down, and there's a few guys going in that, you know, could really make their name on this tour, as we talked about, if they can stand up to the pressure.
And Johnny, that kind of leads into, I know you're of the opinion that, you know, this is not the kind of a tour to be throwing 10 players' debuts and resting a load of the frontliners or the lads who've played a lot of rugby this season. A test series in South Africa probably isn't the environment to be throwing people in like that.
No, and I think, yeah, I do, I have a gripe with people wanting to just pick the next 20 players in Ireland, because like I understand aging players and all this kind of stuff, but like you need to give a platform to the cup. You only need to the cup to develop a couple at a time. Now you'd like to reward form, but form at club level is not form at international level. So like you have to remember that the guys that you're trying to develop, and Andy Farrell and his team and the RFU will be looking at their squad and thinking, where's the next gap? Where do we need to develop someone further? And you need to give them the stability to be able to play within that and develop. So you can't just throw in a load of newbies together. And on the other side of that, like, you know, rest Conor Murray, why not bring someone else? And it's like, did you ask Conor Murray whether he wants to be rested or not? Because he doesn't need to be, you know. Did you ask him if he wants to give up two international caps, plus financial implications, plus the end of his career possibly? So like people think, oh, we'll just rest him now, but it's actually a soft launch into dropping him, like, you know. So I don't agree with it at all. I think Rob Kearney was the one that really got my back up around retirements, because I think people are retiring him from 31 because he was too old, you know. And it's just, I understand, like, you know, Cian Healy and the Jeremy Loughman situation, I could understand a bit of comment around that, but you know, I don't think we need to retire players before their time. They're allowed to have the longest career possible if they're the best players in their positions, if the coach who's selecting them thinks that, you know. So I do have a bit of a gripe around it. One thing I wanted to say before you go off the Irish selection is five centres, no out and out fullback. When is Robbie Henshaw's fullback career over? When do they revisit that? Because five centres going there is a bit mad, isn't it?
Who's your fullback then?
Jimmy O'Brien.
It's a vulnerable area, though.
I got a mad thought around Robbie Henshaw, because I know they tried him again, didn't they? And it probably was just throwing him in out of nowhere. But like, they have five centres for what reason? I don't know. Maybe because Jamie Osborne absolutely deserves a cap. And he's the only Leinster player recently, and you're like, everyone's cap but Jamie Osborne. Everyone in the world knew he's going to get cap. But I don't know. Like, do they know who their fullback is? I'd love to see Mike Haley get more game time just to really put that pressure on. I do think he'd be a quality option there. He's a proper fullback, like, you know, and he's so good in the air as well going to South Africa, but I know he hasn't played all the games recently. And then, you know, where does Robbie Henshaw come back into it?
I'll move it on from that. We've loads of time next week and the week after to keep talking about the Ireland squad, because I think we do need to look over the provinces at the weekend. No two ways of saying it, really, Eddie. A proper reality check for Irish rugby on Saturday.
Yeah, it was. We were all planning a great weekend in Limerick next weekend. Was it to be? I think it's interesting that both provinces have come off the rails probably prematurely at this stage. Leinster certainly more prematurely than most people thought. Munster were beginning to get ahead of steam up. I think both provinces have different situations to look at and situations to figure out. Like, if you take Leinster at this stage, I was trying to think of an analogy for Leinster. They've become a team that have got into a situation where they lose dogfights. They lose dogfights at the moment, going over the last few years. Probably the best analogy I can find is they go back to the New Zealand team that hadn't won a World Cup. They won the first World Cup in 1987. They just destroyed everybody. They beat France in the final in Auckland. And then everyone said, oh, New Zealand are going to win the next 10 World Cups. You know, they'll be unbeatable. And then they had to wait 24 years to win another World Cup. And the problem for them was that when you played New Zealand, and during that era, during the 90s and the noughties, they just hammered people by 20, 30, 40 points in every test game. And ironically, they peaked in the middle of World Cup cycles, the 2 years out. You know, they peaked dramatically. And they came off the rails then in every World Cup, like it's five World Cups in a row, losing quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. They just couldn't get across the line. And the thing you notice about is a team that's winning by 30, 40 points every weekend, they just look unbeatable. But get them into a dogfight, get them into a one-score game with 5 minutes on the clock, and they're not used to it. They don't have the tools to deal with that pressure and that stress of trying to find their way out of a problem. And I think that's happened to Leinster recently. Now, why that's the case is another discussion. But if you look at their history, they've basically, you know, lost three URC semi-finals in a row. You know, by very little, you know, 26, 27, 15, 16, 20, 25, you know. Munster beat them with a drop goal in the last play the game. You know, like they've been there, thereabouts. They've lost Heineken Cups by a whisker. And I think one of the problems they have is during the season, they're just so complete, especially in the URC. They change, they rotate their team, they make 7, 10, 8 changes. They go up in the trash teams by 30, 40 points. And you get into that where everything's going well, what could go wrong? And then you get into a real scrap in a semi-final or a final, and someone punches you right in the mouth from the off, and you just don't recover from it. And I think I remember that New Zealand team that went on to win their first World Cup in 2011. They put a massive amount of work, that 2011 World Cup, into their mental preparation of being in those dogfights and making sure they come out the right side. But plus the fact the World Cup was in New Zealand. But you remember, people forget, they beat France in that World Cup final 8-7.
Mm.
That was a turning point. They won 2014, practically pulling up in London against Australia. So this mental kind of block that are now faces Leinster about coming up short in dogfights. How do you prepare for that? Because you don't want to go out every week in the URC and, you know, not win by 30 or 40 points if you can. But it is a challenge to overcome those tight moments. And I think that's a big thing for them to look at, really, because we know they have the talent, we know the skill sets, we know they have the coaches, we know they have the support, that everything's in place for them. But they've got into this mindset of not being able to find their way out of trouble in big games. And the problem is you cruise through the season, and it's when you get into a URC semi-final, or you get into a URC final, or you get into a Heineken semi-final or Heineken final, the team you're going to play are going to be pretty decent. They've had a good season as well. So they're the one team that are going to tie you up and get you in a scrap. So how do you maneuver your way around those situations and not get caught again and again and again? And I don't want to get away from Leinster. Like, their incredible record. If you look at, if they were an NFL team, for example, and the NFL is judged on, did you make the playoffs? Really, you know, teams don't win that many Super Bowls once in a generation, unless you're the England, New England Patriots. But in America, if you make the playoffs, it's a very successful season. So on that basis, Leinster are successfully beyond belief. You know, they've been in finals, semi-finals at Europe and URC consistently for the last 10 years. But but at the end of the day, the silverware is what people want. But you know, it's a very harsh assessment of them. But they need to figure out now how, when they're in but dogfights, to come out the right side of them. And that, to me, is their big challenge, that everything else is in place.
Johnny, you gave your kind of coaching slash tactical breakdown of it yesterday, on RT.ie. The attacking game is something that we've seen dramatically change over the course of, I would say, since Jack Nene ever came in. It's been fairly obvious that they've kind of gone away from what they were doing under Stuart Lancaster against the Bulls on Saturday. The primary source of attack seems to be kicking high balls down the tram tracks, trying to win turnovers and go from there. And it's very, very different to what we would have seen 12 months ago. What do you make of, some people say it's regressing an attack. I personally, I would just say it's, they're not as enjoyable a team to watch anymore.
Yeah, like I think you let teams off the hook when you don't actually have a cut. You know, like they're not really having a proper cut with the amount
And
of
pardon me, actually, sorry to interrupt. The couple of occasions when they did have a cut, when they might have won turnover ball in their own half and tried to counter attack, that was actually when they looked most dangerous.
that's why it struck me, because when they did, it was like, why don't you do that more? And I know attack is funny because you can't just keep attacking. Like, you do need to conserve your energy for proper attack as well. And I've learned that the hard way. You can't just attack from every part of the pitch, but like, so you have to have a kicking game. But I think their kicking game has now gone too far. Is it that they're looking at stats or not, or it's just how they're setting their game up? I'm not sure. But when they break out of it, they're so good, and their players are used to playing like that. So I think, go back to the start of it, you're after losing Johnny Sexton and Stuart Lancaster. I think, like, you know, not insulting Ross Byrne, but he's not Johnny Sexton. So there is a massive thing that people decided not to talk about. It's not because Jack Nienaber came in and decided to defend. Like, every professional team is going to split their sessions in a certain way. Yes, they had a bit of a learning to do in terms of a new system in defense, but it doesn't mean they just stopped attacking it, you know. So I don't buy that one at all. Not a team as good as that with the systems as good as that. I just think it's changed. And like, when you look at it, they're kicking the ball a lot. I don't think Jordan Larmour and James Lowe are the best in the world at winning the ball in the air. You know, if you had, like, when Razzie came in and Darren Sweetman was like undroppable because he could just win the ball in the air. He was unbelievable, to the point where Andrew Conway had to bring that part of his game up to get selected again. You know, so I'm not saying they're bad there, defensively, maybe questionable, but in attack, they win some back, but they're not winning all of them enough to be kicking the ball that much. And unfortunately, they came up against a Bulls side that had a rock solid set piece, stronger than Leinster's, and a stronger kicking game than Leinster's, even though Leinster's was decent. I just don't know why they didn't put the ball off the pitch more. And also, the Bulls really showed them up. I think the Bulls showed what South African teams can do when they go 100% into a strategy, because they just decided we're going wide early, kick or pass. And, you know, I've kind of said it that when teams go wide or they identify the space wide, they're still afraid to do it in the first play. They kind of see what's on up the middle and then maybe, oh, we have to go wide. They just went edge, won the ball, back to the other edge, won the ball. And Leinster were just chasing them around the pitch. Willie Leroux looked like he was, you know, best player in the world all of a sudden. Mm. And he's a good player, but the game plan suited him. But him and Goosen were so interconnected. If one was there, the other was outside them. They swap around. It didn't really matter. They didn't have numbers on their backs. So I thought the, you know, whatever about the Leinster attack, I just didn't think they fired enough shots. But the Bulls were so, so impressive in a way that South Africa might do to Ireland in Test 1 as well.
And Eddie, like the Bulls kicking game, it's actually a great way to compare the two, because I find sometimes when you get into a conversation where you talk about a team that's kicking a lot, it ends up coming across as kicking equals bad or kicking equals negative rugby. But whereas you look at the Bulls on Saturday and they kicked an enormous amount, but they were varying it so much. They were kicking for touch. They were using it to basically kick passing, you know, crossfield kicks toward the touchline, trying to get to the edge quickly. Willie Leroux had a 50-22, came very close to another one. They were kicking in very, very different ways and varied ways. And it was stretching Leinster in a very effective way.
No shock to that, really, because the Nina Bar defence, the blitz defence, is the wings have to play high.
Mm.
You can't blitz defend with your wingers in the backfield, because the winger, the outside defender, comes up and in and smashes the second last defender every time. So the line speed, this blitz defence, is off the line like mad dogs in a meat house. Winger on the outside, up and in on the second last man, smash the crap out of him. You can't do that from the backfield. You've got to, the wings have to play high. So once the 10 makes that first pass, he's done. Now that opens up the backfield. So the backfield's open now, where if you're playing drift defense, you have a lot more latitude to hold back and measure before you close the gate. So that's the first thing. Okay. So the backfield is now open. The second thing is the blitz defense is narrow. It's tight and it's aggressive. That opens up the outside channels. So very simply, cross kicking into that outside channel is not really that difficult, because you've got guys standing out there and spending their isolation. If you have a decent quick cross kick, the other thing that hurt Leinster, again, Johnny alluded to it, is that as their back three in the air are not the greatest guys in the air. So again, you think that if you were the Bulls coach and you're saying, how do we have a crack at these guys? What's one of the ways with ball in hand? Is we ping lateral kicks into the outside channels where they're going to be struggling to get to because they're so narrow. The backfield is going to be open more because the wingers are coming up and in. And by the way, if they actually are under it and we get a good hang time on it and we get in the air with them, they're going to struggle. We're going to get some of those back. So you can see where the Bulls went off the bat. Like, if you sat down and looked at Leinster and said, where could we have a crack at them? There's your game plan right there. One aspect of it was it. And it worked really well. It did struggle. And that's the weakness of the... Every defence is a weakness, don't get me wrong. But that blitz defence, that's the weakness of the blitz defence, is the outside channels. If you can get into the outside channels, struggles. And the backfield's open as well because the wings have to play high. It's how you avail of it is different ways of doing that. But it was a good game plan. They went for it from the off. They stuck to it. And, you know, it worked. That's the bottom line. You know, Leinster did struggle with that.
Johnny, then finally on Leinster, I suppose the overall summary of the season, as Eddie said at the start, they've become a team now that are losing dogfights, and it's becoming apparent, particularly when they're taken out of their comfort zone of playing at the RDS or the Aviva, where you look back through it now and their last win away from home was, I think, the 23rd of March against Zebra away. Since then, beaten in Champions Cup final, obviously, they lost against Ulster, they lost heavily beaten in those two games in South Africa, and now this as well. And there's big pressure on them now next season, particularly when they have Orji Snyman coming in and Jordy Barrett. But also then as well, like, they're going to be at the Aviva all next season. They need to start putting bums on seats in a big stadium, because they've invested a lot of money in the squad for the next campaign.
Yeah, it's probably the first time in a while that I've questioned what their identity is like. And I don't want to get into too much of, geez, their poor team overnight, because they're absolutely not, you know. So, like, I don't want to get after Leinster at all, but I am struggling to figure out, like, what do they stand for at the moment? Because in order, like, under Lancaster, I think we all knew what they were. And maybe, talking it loud here, but, like, maybe him and Leo were a little bit more aligned in terms of strategy and stuff like that. And maybe Jack coming in is just a little bit different, and maybe that takes time to bed in as well, as the kind of main coach alongside Leo. But I don't see them being the same person either, like, you know, and I think there might be a bit of change there. But whatever it is, anyway, it doesn't really matter. I think, like, between their team selections and their rotation, which is mostly forced on them by Irish selection and stuff like that anyway, but, like, you know, you would question their identity and some of the things that they stand for. I think it's just gone a little bit weaker, which is something that we haven't really said about Leinster in the last 3 to 5 years before now.
I'll move on to Munster, because we are running out of time. And after Leinster were beaten on Saturday, some of the neutral Irish fans might have been thinking, well, at least Munster can hopefully cheer us up. And they might have got ahead with themselves, by all accounts, from advertising their final against the Bulls next week before kickoff at Thomond Park. The overall issue for Munster, I found it strange, Eddie, where the issues for Munster and Leinster seemed the exact opposite of each other, where Leinster were struggling to win dogfights away, and Munster were, all of a sudden, Thomond Park is no longer the fortress it once was, where their best results this season have actually come away from home when their backs were against the wall,
rather than
at Thomond Park as well. And then when Leinster were kind of saying, aren't really playing that much rugby or taking too many risks in attack, Munster, it seems, are now overplaying a little bit at times. I suppose the summary of the season is that, look, they finished top of the table, but they're still a team that are struggling to deliver when they're expected to.
Yeah, my take on Munster this year is that, like, certainly there's things that have changed there. I think under Mikey Prendergast, the attack is now a much different animal. Like, from back in the days with Van Gran, when they were kicking the leather off it, and it was, you know, up your short rugby, really. I think he's expanded the game there. I think they play a really good brand of rugby at times, but I think that their bugbear all season is their inability to take opportunities and really teams when they have them on their knees. And I think this started kind of during the season. I'll just go back. Even I know they won their last 10 games, I think, which is an incredible achievement, you know, in the league, away from home and at home. But a lot of those games I saw that I really thought they should have, you know, pulled away comfortably and put the other team to the sword, but they end up falling across the line. Like, I'm thinking of their big result was Connacht, you know, 47-12 for one part. But Connacht that day just gave away scores, like, you know, like they were giving it to a confetti at a wedding. But like the Edinburgh game, they'd struggled to beat Edinburgh, and Edinburgh, they got over the line. They struggled to beat Ulster, they got over the line. And then I did the Ospreys game for RT, and I just thought that, like, this is the worst team to qualify. They fell across the line. Munster at home, big crowd, lovely evening. They'll open up here and they've cut the Ospreys to shreds. And they did in the first minute. Like, Seabus Troy was right off the training pitch. And then as the game went on, they became more narrow and more narrow, and they started making mistakes. And they fell across the line against Ospreys. So, and then I don't want to go on too much about it, but even the Champions Cup, like, they blew a lead against Bayonne in Limerick, and they ended up drawing it. Mm-hmm. They actually had Exeter, you know, on their knees over next year, and they gave up 2 tries in 2 minutes, then another try in the last minute, lost the bonus point. They had a Northampton beaten in Limerick, and they blew that try and a penalty, you know. So, and the performance isn't bad. It's not like they're playing terrible. It's just that they're in a position to close these games out and either fall over the line or they blow it. And so what happened to them against Glasgow, I felt, didn't shock me, because I felt like, I was watching the game. Glasgow played basically 20 minutes for 14 men. Mm-hmm. And Glasgow are a nice team, but they're not world beaters. And Munster at home, again, all to play for. And they just couldn't get it done. So it's a weird one, because the quality of rugby they're playing is not bad. It's just that they lack that, I suppose, I've listened to Romney talk all the time, the lack of the precision to take opportunities and really kill teams. And maybe it's just the process that where they're trying to get to. They're trying to work towards playing a style of rugby, and they're not totally confident in their skins with it. And when they come under pressure, they make mistakes. But I just, they're frustrating to watch. They're just so frustrating to watch Munster because there are games there that they should win comfortably and they struggle to win them. And even when they get it done, it's kind of, oh, it's a relief at the end. So that's my take on them, you know. They're in process, but I think there's more in them. But next year they need to see more of the more killer instinct, which was Munster's MO always. You know, once you could dominate Munster, they still beat you. But I don't know, they seem in that weird place at the moment where they're letting teams off the hook.
They are, and it, like on the attacking style, as Eddie said, but they're like missing a lot of chances and they're leaving a lot of chances behind them, Johnny. It seems that the style of play that they kind of have at the moment with Mike Prendergast attack, it really is enjoyable to watch a lot of the time, but it is high risk and high reward. And you know, there's a lot of passes in there. There's a lot of offloads in there, trying to keep the ball alive and playing at a fast pace. And is it an occupational hazard of the style of play they have that if they do make it do if they do make mistakes, they're going to be very, very vulnerable to interceptions, counterattacks, loose balls being on the ground and players picking it up, like we saw on Saturday for that first try for Kyle Steyn.
Yeah, the Kyle Steyn one was funny because I think Alex Nankivell just missed his role. Like he ducked out of it. He was supposed to be on the. I know Glasgow defence seemed to have him a bit covered, but if he stayed on that line a little bit over instead of trying to duck back under, they'd have been okay and they wouldn't have given it away. And it's normally a line that their wingers pick up, and maybe a centre just wants to get back under again anyway. He's a good player though, so I don't know what he did. But I suppose that is the risk when you're throwing so many passes. But I saw Jeremy Loughman's kind of line break before their try. Phenomenal play, like the amount of passes. Like sometimes a crowd nearly doesn't care if they don't win the league. Like they've had a good year of watching a good style of rugby. Obviously, everyone wants to see them win the trophy, but their attacking style I think is actually class. I love the overloads that they get. Wingers working hard at Shane Daly, Calvin Nash are all the better for it. So I actually quite like what they're up to. It worked last year, and people I've seen a little bit of like, you know, oh, this is a team that wasn't supposed to win the league last year. We're still in transition. Give me a break. Like, that's not the way they're thinking. There's no coach in the world is like, oh, we won that one too early. We won it because we were well able to win it, is what they're thinking. And they should have won the league this year. You know, like in their eyes, they should, that's an opportunity missed. There's no one in anywhere in Munster thinking that's a transitionary period because I believe their squad next year is weaker than it was this year. You know, so don't tell me this year was the transitionary one. They should have put Glasgow away. But you know what? I was at a wedding on Saturday, one of my good friends, and so I was doing a bit of talking about rugby, like unfortunately, and I had a funny feeling on Glasgow. Sorry to my Munster brethren, but I did because they're locked and loaded with Scottish internationals, like two Scottish teams. They're going to have so many internationals there, and they're very strong. You know, they Nigel Carrigan is there. He's got good grounding in his attack. Like I haven't watched a load of them, but they have the centre partnership. If you wanted to pick one as a combination, you wouldn't be far off picking theirs. They have a few weaknesses like compared to other teams, but they're a good side. Like, don't tell me they weren't going to go to Thomond Park thinking they could win it. And with the amount of niggle and emotion riding on that, they were always going to have a very strong chance of picking Munster off. So, like, they're again with Leinster not going too hard, and then they were a possible chance away from getting through that game and getting home to win a final. Munster are the very same. They had a quite successful season, but it's a massive opportunity lost, like, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part of it, I think, Johnny, is that, as you said, on paper at least, their squad for next season looks weaker than it is right now. You've Orji Snyman gone, Antoine Frisch gone, Simon Zeba retired, Joey Carberry gone. Like Eddie, there's they looked like this was a better opportunity to win it than it actually was last year when they did win it.
Yeah, and I think, look, nobody wants to say it. I think last year they got lucky. Leinster blew the semi-final. I mean, Leinster had more players sitting in the stand than on the field. They played Munster, which is a crazy decision they made. They rolled the dice against Munster, and Munster got them. You know, I mean, and to be fair to Munster, I knew when Munster beat Leinster in the Aviva, they were going to win it. They go to South Africa and win it. It was just that feeling you had that their chance had broke for them. And they were going to take it, and they did take it. It was a great, great victory to win it. I just thought this year, again, I agree with Johnny. The style of rugby they're playing is great. It's fantastic to watch. But they do make a lot of errors at crucial moments, and I don't know whether it's they're forcing it too much or they need a bit more balance to their game. They need to be a bit smarter when to pull the trigger. But they are playing a great brand of rugby. But it's going to be a little harder, yeah. I think next year, I do think the squad's a little bit weaker. And if they get injuries on top of that, it could be a problem. But having said that, it is a good season for them. But they will be hurting because I do think they would have fancied their chances against the Bulls next weekend in Thorn Park. I do believe that. But having said that, I mean, look, it's you can't complain. Again, is it you get to the playoffs? There's always regrets if you get to the playoffs, you get knocked out. It's just thinking like, what if we could have got past that? But it's still been a really good season for Munster, you know. I mean, they have really, I think, come on again this year. But I do agree with Johnny. It's going to be harder to up it again next year. They're one of the same personnel. Will they have to adapt their style a little bit? Will they have to be a bit more cautious about when they pull the trigger, you know, because they watching them, my take on them is always that they leave a lot of stuff behind them. They leave a lot of good opportunities behind them on the field. You think they've got a team and the ball, the pass goes astray or something, you know. But it's a tough one because I think they're going the right direction. I think the way they're playing the game is definitely, I agree, it's a fantastic brand of rugby to watch. But and I wouldn't take away from it's been a good season, but it is frustrating when you probably could have got. And the one thing I was shocked about last weekend is how they let their two best back five players on the bench. You
But then
know, so
the flip side is that tactic had been working very well for them until.
it doesn't keep working, does it? I think there was a time where you kind of fit that script. You know, I think Gavin Coombs, like if you want to get someone to do a bit of dirty work and then he comes on and unleashes and there's a bit of power in that. But I think the Snyman one was probably one where you're like, are you mad? In hindsight, it's kind of are you mad? But there, I don't think there was enough evidence to stick with that either, because I don't think they were trending in the right direction in the last couple of weeks. I think they rode their luck a small bit. So a small bit of change wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. You know, I would have liked to see some change when I saw the team sheet. But again,
Well,
hindsight.
for me, Coombs has been outstanding all year. Like his stats are off the charts. Like he leads the stats in the URC on, you know, carries, contacts, tackles. Like this kind of thing you want in a playoff game was going to wreak havoc against a good Glasgow team. And then Snyman's been their best offloader. He's one of the top offloaders in the URC. And you're playing that open style game, and you have a guy like him who can offload the ball in the middle of the field. You know, I just thought it was like tying one hand behind your back in a playoff game. You know, I just didn't understand that. And I'm sure Graham Rowntree has a good logic for it. But I was a bit shocked when I saw the lineup, to be honest. And it's a one score game at the end. You got to think maybe if they played their hand differently, they might have been playing the final this weekend. That's just my take on it.
I think you approach a league game a bit differently, don't you? Even like in terms of trying to get maximum points and everything, like we've seen
And
Leinster
you're
get.
managing guys' workload as well. You know, league games, you're giving guys runs, taking guys out. This is not what rugby, you know, it's win or go home. So you don't leave that on the table. I just thought that was bizarre to me, especially with a one score game now. Maybe we'll have a different conversation if those guys get started. I do believe that. I'm not just saying it. I'm not playing 1-1 on a quarterback. I was before the game when I saw that, I thought, you know, geez, this what's going on? But anyway, but I'm sure there's a logic to it, but I struggle to find it.
A lot to ponder for Graham Rowntree and Leo Cullen as well over the summer. Very, very final point, and I'm happy to take one word answers. Bulls against Glasgow Warriors on Saturday evening. Who's going to win?
Bulls.
I think Bulls, yeah. Too
Is
much
Wilshere
power.
around?
Full house for the Bulls, right? So
Depending
that's
on
the.
Lura. Yeah, if Lura was out, it might be different, but I'd say, yeah, Bulls.
That's the URC final, Bulls against Glasgow Warriors, Saturday, 4:55 p.m. It's live on the RT News channel. Eddie and Johnny, thanks a million for that. That was brilliant stuff. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again very, very soon on the RT podcast, and we'll speak to you then.